meeting of Senate Community Regional Affairs to order, and we reflect that we have Senator Kelly, Senator McKay, Senator Stimson, and Sturgiluski on hand. And the first bill, let's take up committee substitute for Senate Bill 309. We had a hearing on this bill 309. The missing one? Twyla, you have folders inside for the individual bills for them so they can pull them out easily. 309 is first?
Yeah, they have individual folders for each one of the bills.
Okay. Just a little bit of background on this. We had this bill up before us, and there was a great deal of testimony by particularly DEC, because it talked about a fiscal impact statement. And there was discussion as to what is a fiscal impact statement. But talk further with Senator Hackney, and we had thought we would be able, if you'll remember a little earlier, the Senate passed Senate Bill 292, which dealt with fiscal notes on regulations. And we developed a committee substitute. That bill went over and was in House Finance, but unfortunately we weren't able to catch it soon enough, and the Senate Bill 292 is amended, which covered fiscal notes, the impact on the state, passed and is now law. This bill would add the local government fiscal impact, and it speaks to what the effects are on local government. It's simplified so we don't get into this local government impact statement that nobody understood what we're talking about, and is simplified. And it does meet with the agreement of Senator Hackney, and he's aware that the committee substitute is before us today. There is a new fiscal note for the work involved in following through on this bill from Community and Regional Affairs for that should be attached and in your folder. So I would appreciate if we could acceptance of the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 309 for discussion. Yes?
I would move we accept the committee substitute.
Fine. Is there any objection? Hearing none, then the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 309 is before us.
I have a question.
Yes.
Regarding the fiscal note, it looks excessive to me. What do the people that work for the Community and Regional Affairs that make up the fiscal notes during legislative session, what do those people do in the interim?
All right. Let's have you come up and identify yourself for the record, and we'll find out. Twyla, would you close that door, please, and have put up the committee sign? Do you all have your copy of the fiscal note on that, Cash? It's dated 3/25/80.
I'm Terry Early from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. In response to your question of what the people who prepare the fiscal notes during the session do the rest of the year, as we try to catch up with what we should be doing now. Primarily, if you look at the fiscal notes that come out of our agency, currently about 3/4 of them were prepared by a gentleman by the name of Mackay Campbell, who is a graduate intern, has only been with us for 4 months, and we have historically tried to use that kind of people to do the actual number crunching that goes into the fiscal notes. We, in preparing this fiscal note, we tried to check with the Lieutenant Governor's office and find out how many regulations are adopted annually, and also how many of those affect municipalities. Well, we weren't able to get any kind of a good answer as to which regulations affect municipalities and which ones don't. So that appears to be something that would have to be done at the same time as we're trying to prepare the fiscal notes to determine which ones do we need to do them for.
Are there other questions of Terry? Seems to, a number of the states have adopted this type of legislation, and it in a way seems as appropriate to see what's happening to local governments as it does to what's happening to departments of the, or divisions and agencies of the state through the change in regulations. Are there questions? Have you had a chance to look at that, or further questions of Terry? Okay, thank you. Are you prepared to take action on the bill?
Madam Chair.
Senator?
Let me just say that I feel the fiscal note is excessive. finance can handle that. The concept of the bill is good.
Would you care to make a motion, or would someone care?
I would move that we move the bill out with individual, community substitute out with individual recommendations. I'm a do pass.
Any comments?
I'll be a do pass.
I'm a do pass.
Unanimous.
Unanimous do pass, hooray. We've taken action. Could we have the sign sheet for that, please? Let's take up as next, while we're getting that signed, SB 370, which is the fire prevention, fire systems bill. Fine. We have a motion to adopt the committee substitute. Is there any objection? I'd like to go over and explain to you what we've done on that. Twyla, would you call Senator Rohde and see if he's coming to the meeting? Senate Bill 370, there are several changes. We talked before about the change, and that was before you the last time, that's in Section 1, which calls for the to be under AS 2953-020 as an exemption, rather than, as the sponsor had originally put in, to call for it being directly taken off of the full and true value. What that change does is to keep the full and true value process going, and to you assess the full thing and then allow for the 2%. And that was agreeable to the sponsor, and it keeps the integrity of the present way of assessing property. Section 2 was retained in the bill. There are some changes, however, in Section 3. The committee substitute deleted that portion that said the commissioner shall give preference in the granting of loans under this section to application for loans, the purpose of which is to purchase and install fire protection equipment. The sponsor does not agree with that change, but it is in response to testimony we received from the department that this would be the only loan that would really come in with special preference, and it would, they indicated, create problems in processing. There's also a change in the section that Section 4E was deleted. That one called for the commissioner may not disqualify an applicant for or prejudice the applicant's privilege to receive a loan to purchase and install fire protection equipment on the basis of a prior or present loan to the applicant. It raised some problems with the department asking, does that mean if someone is delinquent on another loan, we're still forced to go ahead and give them a loan? They have a policy whereby because you have one loan does not mean that you are disqualified from getting another loan. You'd obviously have to have adequate collateral. And we added a Section 6, which spoke to, and we discussed this, and I think there was general concurrence with the committee, how we would determine what is a fire protection system that would qualify under this. And because there's a difference in what the National Fire Code requirements are from the intent of this bill, the determination was that public safety should annually make a list available to community and regional affairs. And I think that was agreeable. Do you agree with those changes, or do you have any amendments or anything you'd like to propose? We can go over it line by line. That's basically the changes.
I'll ask, Madam Chair, I'm still concerned about the automatic 2% of the value of an existing system. I mean, I just don't understand, you know, why something that was built, say, 10 years ago, ought to, you know, right away gets a 2% devaluation and a tax break. I just don't understand that.
Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator Kelly, I have problems with that, too. I have problems with, you know, that particular approach. I would have preferred, and I'll be very honest with you, a grant and aid approach where we would truly, well, and that'll cause you heart, but it's all money one way or another. This, you know, it's up to the committee, but it is an ongoing subsidy, if you will, which hopefully will encourage those people to keep their sprinkler systems connected and so on. And it does, as you will note, in Section 3, take the matter out of the hands of the APUC. So there's always, and we had testimony on that you transfer some of the cost, obviously, to other ratepayers. This would come under your water rates.
Let me see if I understand this.
Mm-hmm.
If you put in a sprinkler system...
Terry, would you come up again?
Or if you currently have a sprinkler system.
If you have one in place.
2% of your real property tax credited, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, now what are we doing to pay back the municipalities?
You're not doing anything to pay back the municipalities. There is no recompense to the municipality. Carrie, do you have any comments you'd like to make? If I've misquoted any statements, that's why I appreciate your correction here.
No, Senator Krasuski and I worked with the sponsor to try to do that, and although we're not completely in agreement with the idea of the way it is, we can live with it. I think the assessors have agreed, of the state have agreed, that they can administer it in that form better than it was originally, but the 2% as opposed to trying to figure out what the value is in that old building. As a department, the Community and Regional Affairs does recommend that any loss in revenue to a local municipality due to state action be paid to them or given back to them in the form of reimbursement.
Senator?
Madam Chair, and that reimbursement is not dealt with in this bill.
That's correct. Senator Coletta is not here, but I have to be honest with you that I had some... This matter was before the Municipal Assembly for a great deal of discussion. The matter is before APUC, where they are discussing changes in, at least for the Municipality of Anchorage, water charges. We do have information that we could make available of the impact to other ratepayers as the basis of this. Since there were some pretty strong feelings on part of myself and on Community and Regional Affairs, the department, we went somewhat en masse to Senator Coletta's office with our concerns because worked up some various approaches, one of them being what's reflected here. The original bill would have taken right off the top of the full and true value and really gotten into that concept. The way this one is structured is better in that it allows for it to be in the exemption category, and so you still retain the full and true value concept. The other approach that there was one that would have made it possible for both areas in with organized governments and people living in the unorganized areas to benefit, and that would have been a grant and aid approach whereby you would actually, people could apply for dollars, and it would be a direct grant to pay for installation of a sprinkler system. I think that I can state fairly that the result of that meeting was that the sponsor felt very strongly about the bill in the form that it was, you know, put in. He did agree, however, to the change in the Section 1 that I've outlined for you. So that's basically where we are right now. And there are water flow charges, for instance, in both Anchorage and Fairbanks that are inordinately high. There was and some people turning off sprinkler systems simply because of this flow charge each month. So that matter has, as I say, at least the Fairbanks municipality does not have, they're not regulated by APUC, so I don't know what they've done with their rate structure. I will say that there's a tremendous amount of interest in this bill by the part of the fire chiefs, the Fire Fighters Association, because of the feeling that, and I think it's very true, that it will reduce the overall, or can reduce the overall insurance rates and so on in the community, and keep your assessed valuation up there by every building that you save. And I think we saw Bobby McGee's, and that's a result of one that perhaps, had it been sprinklered, would have been maintained in the community.
Well, Madam Chair, I sort of feel that section 3 through 6 will take care of the problem that the bill is aimed at. The bill is aimed at, you know, number one, making sure somebody doesn't turn off their protection systems because they're being charged exorbitant rates by the utility companies for standby water. Number two would put it into the, or the A section would put it into a low loan program, low interest loan program. Number five is self-explanatory. Number six is self-explanatory. But I'll be darned if I can understand why they need 2% of the assessed valuation as an incentive. I think there's plenty of incentive in section 3 through 6. I'm not accepting section 1 or 2 at all. That's a proverbial windfall, as far as I can see.
Senator?
I would find myself in much the same position. I guess my concern is, We probably couldn't be dealing with a more worthy subject. I think fire prevention is a concern that all of us have. But as I guess to bring in another aspect of this, I've not been impressed with the way the legislature is dealing with the municipalities in terms of revenue sharing. And it looks to me like we're taking a little bit more away from them without them having anything to say about it. And I guess I would be very reluctant to see us do anything with this bill at this time, specifically sections 1 and 2, until we take a look at what we're really going to do with the revenue sharing for the municipalities.
All right, so the major concern that you have then would be with the 2%, is that
That's
correct?
Mine, yeah.
Madam Chair, I have no objection to you moving this bill out, but I'm not going to pass on it if that's any.
And I would be a do not pass in its current form.
Yeah, I'd be a do not pass.
All right.
My major objection to Section 2 is Section 2 in Section 2.
I think I get the message. I would.
Section 1 in Section 2.
Okay, you would be a no rec.
I'd be a no rec, so I could vote against it on the floor.
We have a meeting scheduled tomorrow. Let's put this bill to one side, and I will come back to you. Any other questions or information you have? Your major concern then is not getting out from under APUC, but the fact of the 2% and no reimbursement to the municipality. So we could get some clarification. If there was reimbursement to the municipality, that would answer your question, but not yours, Senator Kelly.
No, not really, because that's the cost of doing business. You know, you're going to be charged property taxes, and it should be, the property tax angle should be taken care of through another mechanism, rather than chopping off 2% here and 3% there for various things. These people know what the cost of business is. And I'm all in favor of chopping municipal taxes, even on businesses, but I don't believe it is approved.
Senator McKay, is that more or less your...
Pretty much. I just have a real reaction, Madam Chair, of state government tinkering with municipal government. I think that if they wanted to put that through on a local municipal basis, that's their prerogative.
Very good. Let's I'm trying to be fair. I hope I am. Go to Senate Bill 348. I will talk to the sponsor and bring that back. Was there anything additional you wanted to add? Twyla? He wanted to add anything additional today? Had you wanted to add anything additional today?
No, I just got an opportunity to look at it, and mm-hmm. I see a problem in on page 2, section 1870.
Could you come up and identify yourself, and let's get that?
Gary Krause.
Yes, Gary.
Fire Prevention and Public Safety. I just got the chance to look at this. On the second page under Section 1870.081, Approval of Fire Protection Systems. Department of Public Safety shall inspect and approve or disapprove fire protection and fire alarm systems offered for sale in the state. When I testified last week, the wording that I understood would be in this committee session.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
This is not the wording that I was testifying to last week.
Twyla, what happened here?
Legal has done this. I didn't ask for this either.
So we gave the same information, and this is their response to it. Does it not meet the needs,
well,
Gary?
Well, in the second paragraph, before October 30 of each year, the Department of Public Safety shall make available a list of approved systems.
Mm-hmm.
That, we testified, we could and would do.
Yes.
But the first part of it, which would require us to inspect and approve or disapprove, there's no way that we could do that with our present manpower. And I did not expect that wording to be in here at all.
Fine, let's take a quick look on that.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
If the question arises in my mind, then that if you're capable of making available a list of approved or disapproved systems, then where is the problem of inspecting the systems? How would you make that list available?
Well, we were going to go to the National Fire Code, which defines a number of systems, suppression systems, dry chemical systems, halon systems, foam water systems, your regular type sprinkler system, that type of system. We would extract from the National Code the systems that would go into this list. But for us to go out and physically inspect the systems,
you've answered my question.
What I had was, for purposes of this act, definition of approved types of fire protection systems and fire alarm systems shall be made available through the state fire marshal's office. That's the same as you apparently had.
That's what
and
I mean.
That was our intent, and we just got this 5 minutes ago from drafting before the meeting. So I think your comment, we had not called for it. The problem does arise in this thing of somebody, and I would assume it's a municipal tax assessor who's going to have to see whether that system on the ground actually is an approved system. That determination is going to have to be made by someone.
If I could just add to that, public safety, it was our feeling that the local fire departments would get the word out on this particular piece of legislation if it was enacted. And we would rely on them to look at the system or be available when it is tested after installation. And during their survey program or inspection program to periodically, they would be in there periodically looking at the system. Mm-hmm. The system that would be installed, the water type system, in many cases the plans would be submitted to the insurance services office in San Francisco for their comments prior to installation.
Mm-hmm. Of course, when we get into the 2%, we're dealing with many systems that are in place. Okay, nothing further on. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. We'll check with legal on it. That jam up here is interesting. Go then to committee substitute for Senate Bill number 348. You have a little green sheet attachment there that just gives a little overview of the bill. Might point out that there's been, thank you very much, Gary, substantial work done on this legislation, and got it out to you yesterday so that you'd have an opportunity hopefully to take a look at it. We have people here from both DPDP and CRA to make some comments. Do we have a new fiscal note on 348? Has that been handed out?
DPDP, 348.
348.
Yes, that's the one.
You have some extra copies there? I'd like to ask the committee how they would like to proceed and what detail they would want on this. First of all, if at all possible, I'd like to have a motion to bring the committee substitute before us.
Madam Chair, I move the committee substitute for 7.348.
Any objection? We could go through in whatever detail you would want. On bills 348, 349, and 350, we cleaned them up to the extent we had an overlap between creating of the boundaries and responsibilities of the administration. What we did was to make the bills independent of one another, so that we have all matters dealing with setting up, for instance, if 348 goes, which relates to establishing the unorganized boroughs, the financial assistance for preparation of regional plans, the permitting of home rule charters, and directing submission of recommendations for adjustment of the boundaries. If that bill should pass, it can stand by itself. That is along with the appropriation bill. 350, which we'll be looking at, is the same way. It incorporates the process of boundaries, the preparation of information on the part of the administration, and it can become operative. Even if 348 doesn't pass, then DPDP, the administration, would go ahead and do all of the data collecting and so on that they have to do according to the REAA line. So the bills could both be passed, or just one could pass and they'll stand alone. So I think that's a substantial benefit over what we had before. In 348, we've added a change in the adoption if they would move on to a home rule borough, so it would take a majority both within and with outside of cities, and that's a new provision, which I think a lot of people would like. We spoke to some problems that Senator McKay had dealing with adjustment of boundaries. You pointed out an area out on the chain where the REAA boundaries may need revision, and there's a process whereby it'll take some time, but the REAA boundaries, the coastal zone district boundaries, could be adjusted, or they could be reported back to the legislature for action. So it's really up to you how far we would like to go. Is there anybody here from either department that would like to talk on the bill? Sally, on 348?
Yes.
Would you like to come up?
My name is Sally Whalen. I'm with the Division of Policy and Development Planning in the Governor's Office.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked over the interim with the Joint House and Senate CRA committees on the local government study, and worked with both CRA committees in developing these bills. And we'd just like to express our support for SB 348. We've long felt the need for a more uniform system of boundaries in the unorganized borough, both to curb the proliferation of boundaries for various purposes and provide for more effective and efficient service delivery for state services. We feel that SB 348 will provide a workable set of boundaries which will accomplish this. This division also has been involved in several regional planning efforts in the last couple of years. And we recognize that there's quite a bit of interest in regional planning from various areas of the state, both in areas that have initiated it and other areas that would like to. And there's really no existing mechanism in the state that can be used throughout the state for this. There's coastal management. There's some nano-regional strategies, but there's no structure that can be used statewide. And for this reason, we support the provisions in this bill, which would provide for the structure and a means for accomplishing regional planning in unorganized areas of the state. The third major provision of the bill provides for a broadening of the range of methods by which residents may incorporate a regional government by allowing for direct transition from unorganized borough status to home rule borough status. We feel this is an improvement over the current requirement that calls for boroughs having to go through first-class status before they can go to home rule status. in some way feel that the bill will accomplish these three things, that is providing, establishing a systematic boundary system in the unorganized borough, providing for regional planning in the unorganized areas of the state, and providing for a direct transition to home rule status, and therefore we support the bill.
I'm somewhat confused now the difference between a first-class borough and a home rule borough. What are the advantages of being a home rule?
A home rule borough can allow more flexibility for local areas. For instance, Anchorage is a home rule municipality. There still, you have to provide the basic taxing and assessing, education and planning. But you are able to have, if you want, a very restrictive charter or within state law to have more flexibility in how you provide services. It's it allows you not, you don't have to follow the general law provisions of the state. There are special rules for home rule boroughs. There is more flexibility on the local level. Is that fair? I think that's a fair response. I think it may be particularly desirable for some areas of rural Alaska. They still have to follow the basic laws of the state, but where you have, for instance, I keep thinking of the Bethel area with some 57 villages, they may want to have a different kind of a governing council, perhaps, than we have in Anchorage or in the Kenai Peninsula. And it does allow some flexibility to meet special conditions. I think it's an excellent mechanism. Of course, Juneau is home rule. Sitco is home rule. That means they have their own charter, and it has to be, when it's adopted and it sets forth in here, it has to be approved by both the people inside and outside the city or the municipality. Would you like to go through in some detail? I don't want to push on this. I feel very good about these pieces of legislation. We're obviously, I have to be more than honest with you, that there's concern in rural Alaska still about the idea of moving toward boundaries. There's a great deal of support for being able to do the planning and look at themselves. But one thing that we have had to keep repeating, this is all voluntary. They do not, I mean, you establish the boundaries, which I think a beautiful case can be made for, because we're developing such conflicting lines out there now. But they don't have to apply, say, to get the regional strategy fund monies. They can just do nothing and stay as they are.
Well, Madam Chair, yes. That's not quite how I read the bill.
All right, let's talk about
one that. The tiniest municipality in a region can request the regional planning study, and the commissioner's going to give it to her.
No, that isn't what it says.
And if she doesn't like the proposal, then she has to re-advertise it.
It calls for it that it has to meet, let's see, what page are we on there? Okay, it has to meet the conditions that are set in 4F, line 9.
That's page 4, Madam Chair.
Right. Oh, that's what it has to do. Let's go back, find the section here where it tells that, I'm sorry, page 3, 5B. That the one where the contract is, that it has to consider the entire population of the unorganized borough. So it does allow flexibility for who actually is the contractor, but it still has to represent all of the people. So you just couldn't have one little section coming in. It's got to represent the interests of that whole area.
Well, it doesn't have to. The commissioner is supposed to take that into consideration, but it doesn't necessarily have to. And secondly, the way I read the bill, if one little municipality requests a regional plan, the commissioner is going to put it out for proposal. Now, if she doesn't like the proposal, she's got to re-advertise. You don't just drop the plan. And the 15% figure that we put in there doesn't really mean anything, because that can be overcome by the smallest, tiniest municipality in the region.
Well, the 15%, understand, that is just an option. C allows for the municipality, the group of municipalities, or a regional corporation plus the residents. In other words, if no one else is moving forward, the residents themselves can. So that's an additional option.
But any municipality out there can request this study. and the commission is going to give it to them. It says on page 4, line 6, the commissioner may refuse all proposals. This is after she puts the study out to bid. May refuse all proposals and re-advertise.
But it says in evaluating, the commissioner may request advice from residents of an unorganized borough. I wonder if we might have the department speak to that. It seems to me that the track record is such that you're just not going out with a plan that's not going to be able to handle all of the things that are being contracted for, that you're going to have just one little group come in and then have a plan that doesn't represent everybody.
Well, I'm satisfied that the plan will be of the scope that I'm satisfied those arrangements are made in here. Mm-hmm. What I'm not satisfied is that, you know, if the majority of the people out there don't want a plan because they're not interested in local government, we're forcing it on them anyway. And then they're going to have to hold an election.
No.
Well, then it goes to the local boundary commission.
No. There is a misunderstanding. We do need to stop and get that straightened out. We are in, all this plan does is, if we'll take a look, and this is on 4, beginning with 11, they have to take a look at, if they have a plan, the analysis and recommendation regarding incorporation, evaluation of the economic development potential, et cetera, et cetera. Once that's done, it can stop there. Then there's another process that has to be followed if anybody wants to move ahead. As to going to incorporation, in other words, the plan itself, like with the sort of like with the Nana Regional Strategies Plan that's going on right now, that's an end result. Now, they may at some time determine that they're going to go ahead and move toward incorporation of a home rule borough, of a first-class borough, of a second-class borough, but that takes other action. They have to go through the law in order to do that. So I don't anticipate that this is going to necessarily move people before it. They may come out with their plan and decide they don't want to do anything. They may come out and say, well, we should form a borough, but nobody petitions and moves ahead to do that. So it is completely voluntary. The planning process is one thing. If at some time the people decide they want to form a borough or move ahead, then they can do that. But it does not mandate any kind of an election, any kind of implementation and following through at all. We need to be really clear on that, because that's something that has concerned people. They feel we're forcing them in the government, and that flat out is not doing that. Sally or Terry, did you have any comments on that point?
I was going to say...
You can stay there, Sally, if you want. He can.
Just from a realistic standpoint, from what I've seen with funding bills for this, the commissioner's going to have to make some decisions on who gets first priority in having these plans done. And it's probably going to be the thing where those people who are the most interested in are the ones that we're going to deal with. I don't foresee any time in the near future enough funding coming forward to study all 21 REAAs. We're a long ways from being that flush with money. And based on our experience with the Fort Yukon study last year, they're relatively expensive to do. So consequently, the ones that the people are really interested in are the ones that we would be doing first, rather than if there was just a small segment in one corner of the REAA who would like a plan. We would listen to their proposal, but we would be more apt to deal with those that are really interested.
Any other questions on this one? Why don't we take a look at the next one, which is 350, which gets into DPDP. Oh, well, I think first we should take a look at the SB 492, because it relates to this. Do you have our committee substitute for SB 492? One thing we've accumulated was paper on this whole thing. That is the appropriation bill that would allow for the regional planning studies to be done on SB 492. Oh, one thing, Terry, do we have the new fiscal note on 348?
Yes, I think so.
Well, we did.
Just get it.
Oh, that's right. We just got that one right. Was the $300 in the second year there? Maybe you could explain that briefly, Terry, the fiscal note on 348, before we move on. We better let you stay up there. That, I'm sure, would accommodate your public hearings out in the area to establish the boundaries.
The major change between this fiscal note and the one for the previous bill was the change in the wording that said, instead of may hold hearings in each one of the REAs, said you will hold at least one hearing And there are several of those RDAs that are, in our opinion, were uniform enough in culture or whatever that they really didn't need to hold a hearing, that people would not object to. And when it said you'll hold hearings as necessary, we intended only hold hearings as necessary. Now that the bill says you will hold at least one hearing in each region, that has substantially increased the travel costs as part of that. What we envision doing as a result of this bill would be to offer assistance to the areas that have indicated interest in some kind of government. And currently, we don't have the staff nor the travel money to go out to everybody who says, well, we would like to think about incorporation. We would like to be able to go out and at least offer them some information so they can make up their own mind on those requests. We currently aren't able to do that. And we see, with this bill going into effect, where we would be replaced in the position where we would have to do that, which would increase the number of people we need to go out and travel there. As you can see, there are several areas that have indicated an interest of some kind in some kind of incorporation. And we try to furnish those people with at least as much printed material. And when it gets to the point where they do look serious, then we do try to travel out there and make a presentation. But based on the information that they've given us, we see that incorporation probably would happen in those areas within the near future.
No, but your major amount of this would be actually to hold the hearings and the establishment of the boundaries. Is that not correct?
Yes.
And this was one of the things we heard from people, that they were afraid decisions would be made and they're not having an opportunity to give input to it. So it's a perhaps well-justified cost if these bills will go ahead. The Senate Bill 492 sets up $300,000 for studies to be accomplished by these areas as they may request it. And I believe the department is looking at four studies at approximately $75,000 being accomplished. There was quite a bit of testimony, and testimony apart from what we have here, to the feeling that that was not an adequate figure. But I think it's well in line with what was spent on both the NANA regional strategies and the Yukon Borough study, was it not, Terry?
Yeah, the Yukon, what we spent on Yukon Borough, in fact, was a little less than that, but they had a whole lot of basic planning information on hand from a study that was done just before we went in that we plagiarized and doing Yukon file study.
Mm-hmm. Okay, are there any questions on that? Take a look then at Senate Bill 350, and Terry, you're having trouble getting up and down. If you just want to stay there, and we could, Sally could move, or Jay could move a chair up if they wish to testify.
Sure.
We had a fiscal note from the earlier, but there have been some changes made. Again, you might refer to your little handout sheet. One of the major problems that, well, there are several that we've had on the part of the state administration has been the ability to get data collected for the unorganized areas of the state, lack of coordination of delivery, service delivery, lack of any set of lines that can have common boundaries out there for both delivery of services and collection of data. This bill speaks to that effort, and Jay Cook is here from DPDP. Would you like to make a brief presentation,
sure.
Jay? Okay, fine. Thank you, Terry. We worked extensively with their division because we had some problems in the way we mandated the original legislation, and I think they're in a position of support of this.
My name is Jay Moore.
I'm sorry, Jay. I'm cooking today instead of doing what I should.
I work for the Division of Policy Development and Planning in the Governor's Office. One of the Governor's major policy themes last year was to strengthen local governments, and the policy themes were delivered to all agencies so they could build their budgets in the discretionary areas around the policy themes. We found as a result of the process that we went through that it was very difficult to extract information from agencies on the basis of local governmental areas because they didn't collect information or process it on that basis. As a result, we found that it was absolutely essential somehow to get agencies to begin collecting reporting data and information on the basis of local governmental areas and to process statistics on that same basis. I think this bill, the way it's written, does that, or would do that, very well. It requires state agencies to do just what the governor's office needs to have done in order to find out how successful or unsuccessful state agencies are in delivering services to local governments. The sections one and two follow a very logical, what I think is a logical progression in terms of effective dates. Section one becoming effective July 1st, 1981 would require the collection and reporting of data and information and the processing of statistics along the local government boundary lines. Section two would require then the development, implementation of plans for providing the services, the coordination of those plans with other agencies, and the reporting of the direct costs of providing those services. That would be done by the effective date of July 1st, 1982. We canvassed state agencies to find out how much difficulty it would be for them to change their administrative boundaries, the boundaries that they use for reporting and so on. Several agencies said it would be a considerable problem, some said it would be no problem. We found out as a result of talking to agencies that said it would be a problem, that the major problem is in formatting of the information, the physical format that it comes in, and what geographical area, the coding for the geographical areas that they use. As a result of that, we suggested section five, where we would evaluate the cost and suitability of a variety of possible information and data referencing systems using the basic hardware and software and collection techniques that exist among agencies and try and bring those together in a network or some common system that would be used by all agencies. The reason for this is to ease the transition from agencies that don't presently carry information on the basis of local government boundaries to the local boundaries that would be set up under the Bill 348. We feel that by doing a study in advance, which would be a three-part study, there would be an inventory of data needs, the kinds of needs that the legislature requires or has, the kind of needs that the executive operations and the governor's office has, and the kind of needs that each state agency has for data. The second part of this, the surveyor inventory, would be data systems and well, the data that's actually collected and provided, the kind of format, the geographic areas, and the actual form that it was in and where it was. You need a survey of that kind of information. And then finally, a survey of the systems that can possibly bring information together. Those systems are now being developed, and it's an opportune time to provide some coordination for those systems. There's the automation of the budget. That's one centralized system that will bring a lot of information together in a common format. There's the Library Data Access Center that has not yet been implemented but was mandated last year. The library is required to keep on file summaries and abstracts of all statistical information that state agencies collect. And that will definitely have a geographic component to it. There's also the ALAR system that Department of Natural Resources has developed that will be a tremendous facility to assist in this cross-referencing of geographic areas. I think that system will allow, for example, Department of Fish and Game to collect information on the basis of habitat or watershed units and translate or transfer the portion of that habitat or watershed unit that refers to any particular jurisdiction to that jurisdiction and apply it. So if we have a way of cross-referencing. Then finally, the governor's, not finally, but in this list, really abbreviated, but the final element is the management by objectives system that the governor is trying to develop for managing state agencies, which will require information at some sub-state, in some sub-state form. And the policy theme to improve local jurisdictions indicates that local jurisdiction is one of the best ways of reporting information. And this would facilitate that also. In summary, I guess, we feel that this is a good bill. It would serve the executive operations purposes for improving state delivery of services to local governments.
I might point out to you that you'll see a duplication on beginning on page 4. It looks like you're running over the same thing that you did on page 1 and section 4417-100. That goes to earlier comments that I made. If 348 should not go forward, but 350 does, all of this information in the bill would be done on the basis of REAA lines. If 348 passes, the same thing would be done, but on the basis of the unorganized borough lines that would be established. So that's why it seems duplicative, but they can each bill then can stand on its own merits. Kind of an interesting comment. He brought out the ALARS, the Land and Resource Management System, that many millions of dollars are going into by Department of Natural Resources. On their own, they picked up the boundaries that had been done in an earlier study. This whole thing could have been accomplished about 3 or 4 years ago, but it got, very frankly, into turf problems with various executive agencies. And the ALARS system, as they're computerizing their program, is using, I believe, a similar set of districts, quite similar to the REAAs, to start to develop their data. But they would like to have, too, the defined boundaries out there. So what's happening in the absence of this kind of an approach is really a whole lot of information being accrued that never can be retrieved or utilized. So I think that's basically what you said.
Yeah.
Are there questions of Jay?
Madam Chair, just I assume that as this is information that will be gathered from this point forward, that it will be hard to go back and retrieve.
It will be expensive to go back and retrieve. It can be done by simply recoding, but it's a manual process of recoding information. I might say a word about what I suspect the fiscal note will be. The cost to agencies will be revealed by a Section 5 study. I think the actual cost to agencies of converting to a single referencing system will depend on the nature of the referencing system itself that Section 5 would require us to recommend. So we can't give a full fiscal account.
Until you come back with that information.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That'll be in the next budget year.
But we can give an estimate on what that study would cost for the three elements that I outlined, the need survey, the actual data survey, and the system survey, mm-hmm. and the recommendation.
And are there questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Jay. Dale Allison is here. Dale, did you want to make some comments?
No, I didn't want to testify. I was just putting my name down so she could mail me.
Great. Welcome.
But I do have a question.
Certainly.
In Willow last year, we tried to incorporate a group yet, and I don't know all the details on it. But there was a problem that the Boundary Commission voted against it because of a tax-based establishment. There was lands that the borough said that they would transfer, would be willing to select in another area. But somehow or other, they didn't get to, but still, it wasn't able to be put up to a vote of the people in the community region, which I think probably would have passed on a higher percentage.
There was an interesting issue there, and I think that's the first time that the local boundary commission, correct me if I'm wrong, had a petition by Willow to incorporate. Analysis was done, public hearing was held. Local Boundary Commission denied the petition on the basis that they did not feel that was an adequate support for the operation of a government. And I believe they had proposed no property taxes, but using their land as the resource or the what would fund their government plus revenue sharing. And I like Forrest. I don't know whether we'll have a chance to meet with the Boundary Commission to explore that, because they also had one, was it in Yakutat, where, or Gus Davis, where they turned that community down on the basis there they had wanted to just exercise the planning function, I believe, because of some threatened development, but were not willing to come up with a property tax base. So I can't give you a lot of background on their thinking, but you're entirely correct, and I think it was surprising to a lot of people because that had not happened, where we've seen a lot of second-class municipalities in rural Alaska form with very little, their government is a seat of funds, really, in a lot
of
cases.
We were surprised because the basis that it was planned on, thought it was kind of unique, about, well, instead of taxing everyone for living here, we'll take the land that comes in the deal, and it'll be put into a package, and it'll be sold, or but an investment portfolio, and the community would operate in the budget established by that portfolio. And if they didn't have them, in other words, government wouldn't become so big that you just didn't use taxes and so forth.
Fine. I it was a surprise, I think. Fine. Any, what's the pleasure of the committee? I think these bills are ready to go, and apart from philosophy, I feel very, very good about them, and I think they address some real problems, and I think they've been massaged and worked with, and probably to the point where they'll please no one, so they've got to be very good.
Madam Chair, I move to move as the committee substitute for SB 348 on the recommendation. And I might might as well have to lift the substitute for 350 and 392.
492.
492 on the individual recommendation.
I'll be a due pass.
Madam Chair, there's been a tremendous improvement in these bills since I first saw the package being in session. I'm looking for a reason to oppose them.
Oh, come on, Tim. Let's have it unanimous.
On behalf of the thousands of rednecks that have moved out there to get away from local government and to get away from the hassle, but actually that is pretty good. But I think I'll do you a favor and no recommend. It'll probably help the bill.
I would love to come out with a unanimous vote. I really would.
I am a due pass, Madam.
Great.
I
am a due pass.
Be enthusiastic, Tim. Overcome your natural tendencies toward urbanization.
Madam Chair, I'm being enthusiastic as I can be about this bill. I think that it appears that there is a point there where you did stop. It appears to me that generally the decision will ultimately be left to the local people. And we're not hitting them over the head too bad and forcing them to accept this local government. Mm-hmm. And in that respect, I like the bill, and a lot of work has gone into it, and it's an excellent job from what we saw introduced. But to do pass these bills, Madam Chair, would be a total refutation of my general philosophy on local government, which is that that governs least governs best. No rec is pretty good for me.
Okay, that's all right. We'll buy that. You would do. May we have those three out to sign, Carla, please? Can you go get them and get them here? I'd like to have those signed today. Could you hold for just a moment, or we can catch you next? Well, you can sign them. We'll catch. I'll just schedule that meeting for 1:30. I have a couple.